think I probably lost my head a bit in that time. I can't even remember a lot of what I was thinking. The main reason I did it is because so many people told me that I couldn't do it.
Now, that hasn't come easy. You've had to make sacrifices, but these people are going to have to do that as well. It's not easy, but it can be done. So welcome back to the Next Level Podcast. On this episode, we have Charlotte Edwards, the accidental female developer. Charlotte has taken the development industry by storm. Over the last 2 years, Charlotte has built over 26 houses, built herself a lovely portfolio of 10 properties in 12 months. But the most impressive thing about Charlotte is her backstory. And obviously, as you know, on this podcast, we always like to dig a little bit deeper and find out who the guest really is. So Charlotte, welcome to the show. Yeah, all good? Yeah. No, so it was last week that I was in hospital with pneumonia. I'd done one with Liz.
Oh my God.
Elizabeth Auburn. And I was here, I'm thinking, I feel fucking hot. Like, as in hot to touch.
It's hot in here anyway, but...
I was like 40 degrees, like temp, blood pressure through the roof, and I'm thinking, I've got to get back to Essex. I'm like, okay, you're going to have to wrap up. Yeah, I was not in a good way, and I went to hospital. It went sepsis, I went...
Really?
It's not sepsis. Yeah, pneumonia. I was like, oh, okay.
Were you ill before you got pneumonia? Because pneumonia is normally like...
Yeah, so I've got... obviously, I've got epilepsy. I don't know if you knew that anyway.
No, I didn't
but
know that.
Yeah, I've got... Take 26 tablets just for that. Rheumatoid arthritis, which I take an injection for.
How old are you?
30. Yeah, I know I look filled with like 50, but rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, but you've got the health conditions of a 75-year-old man.
I know. And then I've got loads of like kidney and like, liver problems because of the meds.
Yeah, of course.
And they went, yeah, because you've just worked through things, because it's what you do. I had a chest infection and a kidney infection, and they went, that's what happens when you leave it. But I have one every month. I have
really?
An infection every month, so I'm used to getting them. They give me antibiotics, it clears up. This one, I just left it.
That's awful.
Yeah, and it turned into, that's a quick and just go and spiral. Yeah, and that's what happened. I was like, okay, yeah, now I need to reassess, look at...
You must not feel good now. Like, it takes a long time to get over pneumonia.
Better than what I was.
Oh, you always feel bad anyway. So
yeah,
it's just
yeah, another, no, better than
just
what I was.
The day at the office.
Yeah, a lot better than what I was. I mean, I was like ridiculously ill in comparison to what I am now. But today's about you. Today's about you.
It is. Yeah. Okay.
So, so tell me, what shaped you into the person that you are today?
Well, people usually say it's your childhood, don't they? But I don't think that is. Like, my childhood was just idyllic. Like, I lived in the countryside. I had, like, you know, one brother, one sister, parents that were together and loved each other. And, you know, like, I had an idyllic childhood. It wasn't probably in the last 5 years that's shaped the person who I am today, actually.
Well, take me back to your childhood, because I always like to go back there and find out what it was actually like. Because I think people that have been following you will know your story.
Yeah.
And all of my podcasts are similar. We find out about who you are and we'll go through your story. Like I say, people have done a podcast on that before. But take me back to your childhood and tell me what that was like.
I mean, it was classic, like, English countryside 2.4 children type stuff. I mean, my dad was a lorry driver. So, you know, blue collar worker. Like, he worked hard, really long hours. And my mum was a housewife. She stayed home and looked after the kids. No health problems, no issues with, like, you know, we were poor, but we didn't know we were poor because, like, everyone was poor back in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
That was just normal, right? We were just normal, like our friends. Yeah, I mean, looking back, I probably wouldn't have changed anything.
And then obviously the story that everyone knows about with your brother and your dad. Let's touch on that. Let's touch on that if you wanna talk about that. What happened there?
Okay, so I suppose it all started in 2019. So at the time when did I get divorced? I think I just got divorced. Okay. And I was like, oh God, this is like, they say it's one of the worst things that can happen in your life. Right. And I was, so I was just sort of getting over that. And I'd got two young children And I thought, oh, that's like the bad thing that's going to happen in my life. That's done and over with now. And then my younger brother got diagnosed with cancer. Not just any cancer. Like, they couldn't even diagnose which type of cancer it was, which meant there was no treatment.
Okay.
Oh, it's bringing it all back now. So we ended up taking him abroad. I basically gave up work for 2 weeks and I was like, okay, there's got to be a treatment somewhere in the world. So I just got on my laptop and I was calling up all these specialists in cancer. And it was so difficult because we didn't know what it was. And of course, the first question that I asked was, what type of cancer is it? Don't know. Mm. And, you know, despite all the tests that the NHS did, they just couldn't diagnose it. Couldn't get treatment privately in this country because, again, you have to get referred to a specialist in your cancer type.
Mm.
So we ended up taking him abroad and we ended up in Istanbul after speaking to a lot of like top world specialists in cancer. And they're incredible. Like, their medical facilities there are way above and beyond anything in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They diagnosed him within 24 hours and started his treatment.
Right, okay.
Had he stayed here, he would have, you know, he did end up passing away after 9 months. Had he stayed in the UK, he would have passed a lot quicker. But at least that gave him a fighting chance. Mm. So they were able to actually clear 50% of his cancer within the first 3 months of treatment.
Wow.
And what surprised me was there were so many people from the UK there as well. So many people who had bad experiences getting treatment here or weren't offered treatment here, who were able to go over there and actually completely clear themselves.
Right.
Yeah. He wasn't one of the lucky ones, unfortunately, and it came back with a vengeance once it had been cleared. And within a few months, it took him over and he passed in May 19.
Obviously, it's a horrendous thing to go through. But you touched on something just before that, which was a divorce.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're going to talk about your brother and your dad as well. Talk to me how you went and how you coped with going through a divorce, because obviously I have as well. How did you cope with going through that at that particular moment in time as well?
You know what? My friends always say to me, it's the nicest breakup they've ever seen, because it actually was just a really simple decision. And it was just like, oh, this doesn't seem to be like working anymore. Mm. Shall we split up? And that was it. You know, it was actually quite a simple decision. There was no arguments. It was like very clinical in a way.
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, on really good terms with my ex-husband, and we share 2 children together. I had this thing of like, I really didn't want to tell my parents. So I was like, oh, they're going to be so ashamed of me. Like, they have been together for years and I don't think there was anyone else that got divorced in our family. And it was just one of those things.
Did you feel there's an expectation on you to stay together? I think there is on society now, isn't there, that stay together, it's going to be okay, work at it. I think there's almost like an expectation put on the younger generation.
Especially if you've got children.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot of people stay together for that reason.
Yep.
I am not one of those people.
No, neither am I.
Like, I'm not scared to make a change if a change needs to be made or if I think it's in the best interest of everyone involved. I'm not a person to just kind of stick with it because I made the decision and now I have to stay with it.
Yeah, I mean, you took responsibility. And I only anticipate from what you've just said there that both girls, is it?
I've got a boy and a girl.
Are thriving because of that.
Yeah, they don't know any different. Yeah. That's just normal for them. They have an amazing life. They don't know any different. As long as they're loved and they've got security and they're looked after and they're educated and what else do they need? It makes no difference whether they have one house or 2 houses. Yeah. I mean, surely it's a benefit to have 2 houses better than one, right?
Well, I mean, we'll talk about the housing situation. But take me back to your brother.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? Because there's going to be people that are in a similar situation that don't go on to be a property developer, don't want any interest, or don't have any interest in property or business, but are going through what you've been through.
Yeah.
But have no idea how to actually go and deal with these problems. I don't have the facilities to go to Istanbul.
Yeah.
But they need to know how to deal with it.
Yeah. And let me just tell you as well, the Istanbul trip was on a bank loan as well. So that was another issue that had to be repaid later down the line. Yeah. So that was, we'll get onto that when we get into the development stuff. But that was, you know, obviously there were financial implications to that. How did I cope with it? I just remember being so angry. So he was only 28 when he died. And I was 5 years older than him. And I think there's an expectation all the way through growing up that you look after your younger sibling. Mm. Like if he's getting bullied at school, you would sort it out, or, you know, you always looked after your younger. So I just felt so angry because I tried everything. Like I tried everything literally all around the world to try and make, like when it came down to it, it was me that took the decision to go to Istanbul. I, out of all the other places we could have gone, Mexico, Germany, I chose that place. So I felt a big responsibility to, like, I would arrange all the travel arrangements for him, get him there every month for the treatment. And I just thought, shit, am I allowed to swear?
Cool. You say whatever you like, whatever you like.
Am I allowed, did I make the right decision? Should I have made a different decision? Would that have impacted his outcome? So I took responsibility for that decision.
Who were you angry at?
That's a really good question. I suppose I was angry at myself. Really angry at myself. Should have done more, should have done something else, should have gone in a different direction, should have tried something else.
Why?
I don't know. But I think there was a mix of anger that I should have helped him. And like, I remember him saying, like, he would say, like, please help me. So, and I had those words like ringing in my ears afterwards. I don't know. I could have made different decisions, but I don't know if they would have changed the outcome.
Obviously, hindsight is a wonderful thing. But looking at what you have achieved now, why is that the reason that you carried on the legacy, if you will?
Well, about 3 months after my brother died, I found out that my dad had got cancer. I think it was a large part, like, I think he was heartbroken because he was a typical man that he would never showed his emotions, like he held it all inside. And I do think that my brother passing, like, no one should have a child, see their own child die. I think that brought on whatever he had, and he then had cancer too, and he passed away 6 weeks later. So we had the same thing again playing out again, but it was almost fast-forwarded because he lasted even less time. So it was... I think I probably lost my head a bit in that time. I can't even remember a lot of what I was thinking.
What do you mean by lost your head?
Oh, I just felt like a need to escape all the time. Mm-hmm. I was constantly, and I did that by getting on flights.
Okay.
I'd be like, I've just got to get away this weekend. I'm just going to go away for a few days. I'll be back. I've just got to get, like, I had to escape it. And I continue that to this day, actually. So I've bought a holiday home in Spain, and I continue to escape.
Marbella.
Yeah, in Marbella. I love it there. But that's my escape. That's what I used as my escape all through. And, it, you know, looking back, actually, it was probably really selfish to just go and escape when you've got somebody that's sick. But that was my way of coping.
Did you ever feel lonely?
Oh. I suppose I did, in that I didn't know anyone else in the same, like, position as me who was trying to navigate this.
I don't mean in the property world. I mean, no. Before, yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, no, because I wasn't even in the property world at that point. Yeah. So I suppose I did, in that I would have loved to have had somebody that had been in the same position, like had a sick relative and gone, you know, this is what you need to do. Like, this is what's going to happen. This is, you know, this is how long things are going to last. These are the symptoms. This is what's going to happen. This is what you should do. I was guessing it all and like doing my own research and finding it all out and reading books and things or like medical conditions. And so, yeah, I guess it was lonely. I had two young children then. They were probably like 4 and 6. But even so, I guess it was lonely. And, you know, weirdly, like even when my dad and my brother were ill, like I couldn't talk to them about what to do because I didn't want... I don't know whether it's a medical thing, but they didn't ever seem to acknowledge how ill they were. And I didn't want to bring it... I didn't want to tell them. So I did feel lonely in terms of trying to make decisions that were best to them, but really had nobody to discuss it with.
What was your sort of symptoms of the loneliness at that particular moment?
I think I definitely started like having, so the first time in my life I started getting anxiety, which I'd never had before. And I didn't understand. And I'd had friends with anxiety and I was just used to think like, pull yourself together. Like, what are you talking about, a panic attack? But I then started to get those heart palpitations and have those sort of anxious thoughts, which, so that was something new for me. But, you know, since then have found that quite often trauma can bring those things on. So, yeah, so anxiety, depression, all those things that I'd not really experienced before started to come forward. But even then, like, I had to almost put those to the... Like, I had decisions to make. I had to have a clear mind to make the best decisions for my family.
Did you put things in place in order to have coping mechanisms for those symptoms, if you like?
I ended up... I mean, I think it was... It wasn't until after they both passed, and I mean, it happened so quickly anyway that I didn't have time to understand what was going on until afterwards, but I ended up having, I had a year of therapy.
Okay.
So I did the talking therapies, which was amazing. That transformed my life. And I also went on medication, anxiety and depression medication. And I would say a combination of those two things like really transformed me personally, but also then how the business has grown as well. It cleared my head. It allowed me to make decisions that were not emotive decisions.
Yeah.
And also allowed me to be a better parent as well and a better daughter and friend.
And obviously, for anyone that's listening, it's okay to go to therapy. I say this pretty much every single podcast.
Everybody should do it. Like, yeah. If you have never done therapy, you're missing out on this such a good experience in your life.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And obviously, shortly after your father passed away, you took on the family business with no experience because you was in marketing, PR.
Mm-hmm.
You've done it for 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And you took on the family business.
I'd never even stepped. So my dad and my dad had had this, you know, like I say, he started as a lorry driver. And then he started like, oh, I fancy like, he liked grafting like with his hands. So he started... like building houses, one and then two and then three, and he built it up. And then my brother joined him. When my brother left uni, he joined my dad as well, and they would just be grafting on the building site, proper men's work, as I call it. I had my own business. I was a marketing consultant. I really enjoyed that. That's what I trained for. That's what I went into, and I never really stepped foot on a building site before. After... my dad died. I found out that there were some, he'd bought a piece of land with planning permission for 25 units on it, 25 houses. Now he bought that with a bank loan. and some of that had been used to fund the medical treatment, which of course, like anyone in that position would, like, why wouldn't you? But you know, it was six figure medical treatment. So there was a problem. and I had never run a business like that before. I'd never stepped foot on a building site. I did not know the names of the people that even worked there. my dad had no computer, so he had no, like, there was no systems. Like, it was all in his head. And, you know, even when he was passing away, bless him, and you know, even when he knew he had terminal cancer, and, like, he never once said anything like, oh, you know, do this, you know, if I'm gone, do this. Like, there was no instruction whatsoever. So I just had to sort of figure it all out. All I had was his mobile phone. And luckily for me, he'd saved the numbers, like, you know, John Plumber or Dave Architect or whatever. So I was just, that's all I had. So I was just going through these numbers, ringing people, and trying to piece stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, COVID came. So this was November 2019 when he passed. So then COVID came.
Mm-hmm.
And that changed everything again. And I just questioned my choices as to whether I should have, you know, I could have just shut down the business, couldn't I? I could have handed back the keys to the bank and gone, there you go. And the reason I didn't, well, it was twofold. I think a lot of people go, oh, it's really nice that you did that for your dad and you carried on the legacy and you wanted to do that. But I think actually the main reason I did it is because so many people told me that I couldn't do it. They said, just don't even try. You're not going to be able to do it. You don't know anything about it. There's too much risk. There's too much debt. Just give it up. Just get rid of it. Carry on what you're doing. And I didn't like the fact that they did that.
At what cost has that come to you? So personally, and in business?
Okay, well, at the time and for the first 3 years, it came at a big financial cost. I had to take my kids. My kids were in like a really nice private school. I had to take them out because I had to work for 2 years, like, not getting paid. So I took a financial cost. I had to give up all of my marketing clients. So I had no income. I had to like work on a building site, like, so physically, you know, unloading lorries, sweeping floor. Like, I had no useful skills for a construction company, so I was at the bottom. Like, I was sweeping floors and unloading lorries and, you know, making phone calls or going and get pieces of guttering, or, you know, I was the gopher.
Not knowing what them items were. Either,
no,
really.
I didn't even know what they were. I didn't even know what they were. I went, just say that again. I was Googling it. It doesn't sound like it's spelt, and it's like, oh no, I don't know what it is. And I was getting the wrong things, and it was honest. It was like being on work experience when you're 16. And I thought, like, I've given up a role where I know what I'm doing, I'm good at what I'm doing, I have good clients, and I'm labouring on a building site, not even getting paid. I thought, what, like, all because somebody told me that I couldn't do it. But yeah, that was, I mean, we're almost four years on now. And it's in a really good place. So I absolutely love what I do now. I'm not labouring on the building site anymore. So as soon as I was able to get the company into profit, so we're talking 2 years down the line, into profit, able to start paying myself, able to enjoy it, like, because the pressure was off, right? The bank loan was paid, the loans were paid back. We're into profit. We're like, I know what I'm doing now. I know what the names of these building materials are now. I can order them without making mistakes. There are other challenges, like, you've got the increase of materials costs, the great plaster shortage of 2021, and all those kind of things. Cement shortages, all that, all these kind of daily challenges that property people face. But I've been able to put in a system now, and I've had people that have now worked for me for like 3-4 years. So I've been able to promote them, for example, to site manager. So I was doing the site managing, I was labouring, I was doing all the paperwork, the legal work, the sales, the marketing. Like, I was doing everything. And I had 2 kids that were off school because of COVID. So it was ridiculous what I was trying to do. But, you know, was it, when I think back, it was probably, you know, keep your mind busy, and then you don't think about what's just happened.
So
I don't know. Had I been in a sane state of mind, would I have made the same decision to take on that business? I don't know whether I would have. I don't think I'd do make the same decision now.
I don't know, because I've looked at you when you've obviously I've been following you for a while, and it's not the only thing you've done in the last 2-3 years. You've then gone and put just another 10 properties in 12 months, which is not easy to do.
So when you've got nothing, you've got nothing to lose. Like, that's one of my favourite sayings. So at that time, because I had no income, and actually I'd just taken on a load of debt and a business that I didn't know how to run, I started educating myself on property, and I started reading about these property investors who had these portfolios of properties that paid them monthly income for like no work. And I'm thinking, why am I labouring on a building site when I need to be having properties that pay me every month. That's what I need to do. So I thought, right, that's what I'll do. So I had 50 grand of savings that I'd sort of saved over the last few years doing my marketing. And I was like, right, okay, what can I do? How I could burn through that in a year. I need to stretch that and make that, invest that to pay me an income. And that's what I did. So I set myself the goal of getting 10 buy-to-let properties in 10 months. Did that through a range of various strategies like new build to rent, BRRRs, and just straight for buy-to-lets. So that I had that, took me a year, well, 10 in 10 months, but by the time everything was refinanced, it would be just over the 12-month mark to start paying me a salary.
That's ridiculous. Ironic. Anyone that's watching.
Ironically, by the time I'd got that set up, I'd also got the business into profit. So it was a win-win at the time.
Yeah. So for anyone that is listening, you can do it, but you have to sacrifice, I think, is the message to take from that.
Yeah.
You have to believe. I've often have conversations with people and like, I really want to achieve X amount. That's obviously 5 or 10 grand seems to be the figure that's thrown around nowadays. But you touched on something there, when you've got nothing to lose. I think everyone's definition of something to lose is different.
Yeah.
So you had your kids. Mm-hmm. And often I'm speaking to people, I can't do that because of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Why was your mindset different?
I feel really bad now, but I didn't even take the kids into consideration when I made that decision. I was like, I naturally think what's best for me will be best for them.
I think because we've both got kids, and I understand why you've done it, but it'd be people out there that have kids and can't understand why you've made that decision to put them out of school, to think later on. I completely understand why you've done that, because they're going to have a better life.
And luckily, I've proved that right now, because I'm now looking at putting them back into like a school that they want to go to. And, you know, they have a holiday home in Marbella, and they have like a rental portfolio that they're going to inherit, and potentially a development company as well.
But so, also, it really doesn't matter what people think.
It doesn't matter, no.
It really doesn't matter what people... Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Who really gives a shit? You've taken on this massive debt and also obviously built a portfolio in 10 months that people take for 10 years, really, let's be honest, and procrastinate over. I've been looking at doing property for the last 3 years. No, you really haven't. You've just been looking on Rightmove.
Yeah, well, that was me. That's what I've been doing.
Right, okay. I mean, we're all guilty of it. I was doing the same.
I was like, oh, there's no hurry.
Yeah, but then you just took the action. But you've done it in 10 months.
Yeah.
And not only that, you've now turned it into a profit.
Yeah.
So.
But it was it going back to the first question you asked me is like, what shaped you into the person that you are now? Well, it's the last 4 years that shaped me into the person I am now, and probably not the previous 34 years.
But I think it kind of has, because that's what's driven you. It's given you that drive, ambition, not to...
Do you know, I think because I had such a comfortable life, a comfortable childhood, I was never forced out of my comfort zone. Mm. And actually being forced out of your comfort zone is probably one of the best things that can ever happen to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people that live in there. And even sometimes when I fall back, I go, oh, that's all right, I've had a good month or good... or whatever it may be, I'll go, that's really good. No, we've got to keep moving forward. But there, you do have to recognise that it is okay to sometimes relax, chill out a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, what you've done is amazing. And then sometimes, I mean, do you ever look back at what you've achieved in the last, say, 3-4 years now and go, wow?
I get like post-imposter syndrome, if that's possible.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't. I take on new projects and I think, oh my God, I can't do this. How am I going to get it? Do it? And then I realise I've already done it, and I've done more than that, actually. Mm. So And I think, oh my God, did I do that properly? How could I have done that? How did I do it? And I do question myself, and I'm like, no, I did do it. I've done it. Like, I can do it again. I can keep going. So, yeah. So, but surrounding yourself with people who are also doing the same thing as you has helped me no end.
So when you was on site, what was it like when you first arrived on site? Because, again, this has been spoken about on other podcasts. How did you deal with the... I wouldn't say abuse. Abuse is the wrong word. But the men that were on site. Really, that's what it was, wasn't it? You would have turned up on site, and I've heard you say this. Where's the man?
Where's the man in charge?
Where's the man in charge, yeah.
Always, like, that was the favourite saying. Mm. Where's the man in charge? Where's the boss? And I just used to say, oh, well, you're looking at her. Oh, right. But even other comments like, oh, how do you manage all this, love? How do you manage this yourself? Is your, you know, have you got a partner? Are they helping you? I'm like, no, actually, I'm single mum. Oh, you know? So I got used to sort of surprising people, really. How did I deal with it? It used to upset me. It did upset me to start with. And then I thought, you know what? I'm just going to laugh at it because they don't know any better. That, you know, like, they don't know any better and that's it. Like, so I'm just going to educate them.
Yeah, no, I agree. Do you feel that the men were, or they felt feared by you coming onto site and emasculated?
I think they, and like they still tell me now, they're like, I can't believe we're still here and you're still doing this. Like, we just didn't think you'd be able to do this. We thought like we'd all be finding other jobs, or, you know, and some of them did walk off, and thought that like there's no way that this business can continue and stuff. So, and the ones that are still here are like, they've been promoted now and they have like a lot of autonomy to you know, run their own job and run their own sites and stuff. So they've been rewarded for their loyalty. Even I had a conversation last week with a site manager, and, you know, I've just taken on another development site, got 54 house pipeline now. And he's going, I can't believe that you're still doing, like, you're still doing this and you're succeeding. Like, he went, I never would have put money on this. I went, well, serves you right,
doesn't it? But why?
Because who would have, right, if I'd have gone to a bank at that point and gone, I've never done this before, I'm going to build this site of 25 houses, can you lend me some money? Mm. They'd have just gone, no, they'd have laughed me out of there. And so would if I'd have tried to get anyone to work for me and gone, listen, I've never done this before, but do you want to work for me? Like, they wouldn't have. The fact is, the bank had no choice because they'd already unknowingly lent me the money, or lent the business the money, right? So I was their only hope of it getting paid back. So they had to back me. And the guys, well, some half of them walked and half of them stayed. So
how do we change that setting in the construction industry? Because you tried to apply for courses as well and got knocked back.
Yeah, I did. So because I was like, I couldn't afford to employ a site manager. So I thought, oh, I'm going to... And none of the lads that were working wanted to be the site manager at the time. Like, they were all sort of fairly low. You know, they'd not had the responsibility before. So none of them wanted to step up, take responsibility for it. So I was like, really, you're going to make me do it? Okay. And I've never done it before. So I took it on and I thought, well, there must be a course I can go on to learn how construction works or how a site works. So I rang up all the various like building colleges around the West Midlands in my area, and none of them would accept me because I had no experience. And I said, yeah, but listen, I'm running this site, building 25 houses. And they went, well, how much experience have you got? And I got, well, none. I've been here like 3 weeks. And they said, well, no, you need at least 6 months experience before we'll consider you.
But surely it works the other way around if you're... That's why you want the education.
No, I know. No, right. It doesn't. I know. I don't know. I don't know. But now those same colleges are asking me to come in and lecture their students.
I'd say no. No, I wouldn't.
It's gone full circle. Yeah.
That's mad. But surely if you want the education, and then they would take you on. But yeah, how do we change this for females, specifically females in construction?
Like, we just need more role models, right? Mm. So, like, I do my best to, like, talk about construction and women in construction, and I get involved in various initiatives around it. So I try and do my bit. I go into schools and colleges and talk to girls about going into construction. You know, in this country, we've got a massive, massive skills shortage, but there's only 50% that ever consider going into construction, and that's like the male population. Well, what if we could double that by having the female population consider going into construction as well? And there are some, but they're so rare that I was driving down the road not long ago and there was like a female road worker and I almost put the brakes on because it's so unusual to see. Like, it shouldn't be unusual to see a female like working on the roads, but it is. We just don't see women in construction. No, it is.
And I think the length of time that they'd stay in the job in comparison to, and this is, it's not wrong, well, it is wrong to say, but it's just facts, in comparison to a male, because they'd probably end up getting more work, is...
Yeah.
I mean, you just look at the stats. You go into Checker Trade, female compared to a male, it's like 5%, maybe even 10%, if that.
Yeah.
Which is wrong.
Well, the stats on women in leadership in construction is less than 1%.
That's ridiculous.
Less than 1%. I don't know any other industry where that...
No.
Like, no. Even you think, like, traditionally female industries like hairdressing or makeup artists, like, I don't even think, you know, that those stats are the same in with men on that side.
But you went, obviously, about not so much promoting your development as such, but you went onto social media and then marketed yourself.
Yeah.
And promoted it. It was like, oh, wow, this is who you are. You was raw, you was being honest and relevant. I was like, yeah, bang, I'm on the scene now. So talk to me about what you've done with your social media.
Well, I was very passive on social media. So I went on Instagram and I just was there to learn, right? Because I needed to learn stuff. So I was just following other property people, like learning what I could, very passive. Like I was just lurking in the background, you know, consuming everything and giving nothing. And then I guess as I built more confidence in the job that I was doing, I started sharing that, or maybe I started like asking for people's opinions. And what I found is like the more I started to give, the more I got in return. Mm-hmm. So the more I started to share, the more people would reach out and give me advice, or I could, you know, ask me advice even at some points. So that it just grew from there. And of course, my background's in marketing and PR and social media. So it was one thing that I felt like I was comfortable at doing.
Yeah.
And so I've tried to kind of merge the two.
Yeah.
And I found it, you know, it's definitely opened doors for me in unexpected ways. Not only finding friendships with other people who were in similar positions to me, but also, like, for example, we have the latest development site that we're working on. There's a like an old like farming couple that live across the road, bless, and they're so kind, bless them, and they said, we've seen you on the internet. They said, come and use our car park, come and park all your cars and vans in on our driveway. And they literally for the last 6 months have, just because they saw me on the internet, have let me come and park, you know, let all our builders park on there. Like, it's had really unexpected positive consequences to being just out there and sharing my journey.
And do you feel that a male would have had that impact?
Ooh, I mean, there are, and because there are like really strong male role models, construction role models, and property guys there, that, and like they are the majority of them actually, and they're probably the ones I learnt off.
And that's why I asked the question, I think, because
I suppose I'm unique in that. I don't know any other female property developers doing what I'm doing. Like, I would love to. If they're out there, please get in touch.
Mm.
But
I think it's like you said, the impact that you've made and the difference and the value that you bring, that's what people can relate to. And it's not just in the property. It's like you said, people can come to you for any opinion. It doesn't just have to be property related. It can be anything in general.
Yeah.
Even you look at your feed. It doesn't have to be just property, it could be absolutely anything, and then you're going to provide value. Yeah. And I think that's what people can see through your content
on all social. Property can be quite dry.
It's like, shit.
It's really
dry. We all invest in it, and it's a great asset class, but it's so boring. If you're looking at investing in property, I'm not saying don't, but don't put it on a pedestal. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
People do.
Definitely. Like, my sister's into Bitcoin and she's like, why are you even bothering with these properties? I'm making 30% and I'm doing nothing. Like, so, you know, there's definitely better or different asset, you know, they all have their own strengths, but there's definitely better or different asset classes out there that you might suit you better. But I think, like, I try and share messages of female empowerment.
Yes.
Of females being independently financially wealthy, which is so important. How many women are there that are stuck in relationships they don't want to be in just because they're not financially independently wealthy? I know quite a few.
And it comes back to being a single mum.
Yeah.
I imagine it was a huge driving factor, being having that level of security for you and your kids.
Yeah, definitely.
And I know for a fact there's a lot of women, I know personally, I wish I could do this. I wish I could take the kids away. Well, now you've built that little ecosystem for yourself that you can take on another site of 54 units.
Yeah, correct.
You can also make a decision not to.
Yeah.
Because you've got a portfolio of 10, it's going to bring in X amount each month.
Yeah.
Or you can go to Marbella with the kids. Now, that hasn't come easy. You've had to make sacrifices, but these people are going to have to do that as well. It's not easy, but it can be done.
It can be done. Obviously, there's some people who have, you know, what always surprises me is, like, I started coaching women to invest in property, right? Mm. And what always surprises me is, like, they'll say, oh, I've got like 200 grand in savings and I just haven't done anything with it. And I'm like, what? Mm. How have you amassed that much and just not invested it in anything? And actually, you know, some people can quite easily, you know, invest that into buy-to-lets and have a nice, easy return on an investment. And then there's other people I work with, they've got 50 grand and they need to stretch it as far as they can. I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to roll your sleeves up. You're going to have to get your hands dirty, because to make that stretch, you're going to have to do what I did.
Mm. Tell me more about your program, just quickly.
Well, you know what? My program has just moved online because, so I was working with women one-to-one.
Okay.
It's called the Freedom Through Property course, and it's basically the freedom that I got by having that property portfolio to be able to, like, go and live in Marbella, to go and travel, to spend my time how I wanted, right? So I used to coach women one-to-one over Zoom. I'd take them on the whole journey from how to find a property, how to fund it, how to refurb it, and then how to either flip it or rent it out. And then how to do that at momentum. So how to have a pipeline of properties coming through. And it was a victim of its own success, really, because it got to the point where I couldn't keep up with the demand for it. So I recorded all the sessions, all the content, and I've put that onto an online learning platform now. So
I think, obviously, the description will be, I'll put a link in the description if anyone wants to reach out to yourself, that they can.
Yeah.
I think that the most important thing to recognise about that, though, you can make as much money as you want through property, as I've already mentioned, but is that you maintain the relationship with, obviously, your mum, your friends, your family, but your kids as well.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing that I take from that, is that you can make this money, but if you don't spend it and you don't enjoy it, and your health as well. I know you're big on your mindset and your health.
I'm big. Like, after everything that's happened with my family, like, I make sure every year I have like a full body health check. I work out every morning. Like, I really, really look after myself, and I never used to do that. But that actually has a knock-on effect, in that it's, ever since I've started doing that, the business has just got more and more profitable because I'm making better decisions, because I'm looking after myself. So whereas I was working myself into the ground previously, actually, that thinking that I was working for the business and you know, saving money and making a success of it, actually I wasn't. I'm better off working, you know, 4 hours a day of like quality work, and, you know, look after myself and go for a massage afterwards or do my workout in the morning. The business makes a lot more money when I look after myself.
So what would you say to someone that's looking at starting now and they're going, oh, I can now go for a massage after 4 hours? Because
they haven't earned it yet.
I was just about to say that.
No.
If you're thinking of starting, you can't go for a massage yet.
No, like, you've got to like earn that massage. You've got to like really like work your bones to the to the maximum. And like, I drove around in it. Like, so I drive around in a Range Rover now. I drove around in a Peugeot Bipper van for 2 years. Like, I used to be embarrassed as well. If I was meeting other property developers, I'd be like, oh God, like I'm going to like park around the corner and walk to this event or something. Like I just didn't want anyone to see it. But that's the reality.
Yeah.
Because like, if your money's tied up in property, which anyone who invests in property knows it is, asset rich and cash poor.
Yeah.
It's just what you got to do. You got to do what you got to do.
And see, I want to talk to you about relationships. That's something I do want to come on to. Personal relationships, that is.
Okay.
But with your kids, you said at the very beginning of the podcast that you wasn't necessarily involved within the family business.
Yeah.
Are you involved in your kids?
I mean, I'm trying to.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, they can't get away from it because when the schools were shut down during COVID, they were having to be on the building site with me.
Mm.
Like, so I was shutting them away in like little port cabins and saying, right, just stay there for a minute. I've got a meeting or, you know, so they were literally actively involved.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? I do try because I don't think they teach in schools what will make you successful financially in life.
Mm.
Okay. And I'm finding that increasingly, like my son is 11 and he's obsessed with exam results. And I said, listen, mate, it doesn't matter what your exam results are. Yeah, but I've got to get good exam results so I can get a good job. And I went, and what are you going to do with a good job? Are you going to have a boss and you're going to have to ask for permission to have a week off for a holiday? Or are you going to be your own boss and you're going to decide how much you get paid? I said, that's what you want to be doing. I said, forget about your exam results and getting a good job. I said, you create your own job. So I'm trying to get in their heads a little bit.
What does his dad say about that?
Oh, you know what? His dad's the opposite. His dad's like, no, you're right, mate. You've got to go and get a good job and you've got to, you know, you've got to get good exam results and go to university and get a good job. And I'm just like, oh, no. So hopefully they'll be quite balanced because they're getting both sides of it.
No, I'm on your side. I agree. I'm not taking sides, by the way, people. Well, obviously I am because I'm very much of the opinion If you work for someone, then they've pretty much got you by the short and curlies. That yeah. At any time they can just go, we don't need you anymore, see you later. But if you start your own little business or whatever it is, side hustle, if you've got a job, then I'm not reliant upon anyone else.
No.
And then if you want to take that holiday, that's on you. But only you will know if you can afford to do that.
Yeah.
So you've built a little, well, a little, it's not little at all. It's probably the biggest thing you can do. And you didn't just go, what fascinates me is you didn't just go straight in with the flip or anything like that. It was the 26 in the end.
It was, oh, you've done your research.
26.
Yeah, we got an extra one on there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you kept, was it four?
Six in the end.
You kept six in the end. Six. Originally was four and then you had another
two. Yeah, oh, you have done your research. Yeah, you have, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what fascinates me. But even more than that is that you maintain the relationship with your kids on site, which is what I always done when I built my SA business up with mine. They was always doing the viewings with me. Obviously, when we do the video tours, they was on them. And then when I go out to guests, they'd be like, oh, well, yeah. And it was,
yeah.
Okay, I would leverage the kids because they'd be like, oh, we'll book direct. Why? Because my kids are on it. And then it'd bring even more guests in,
yeah.
Which is even brilliant, but even more better for me. But yeah, what about personal relationship with yourself? Have you found it hard during the whole situation that you found yourself in with trying to build the business up?
You mean the relationship I have with myself?
Like
a partner?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, I haven't got time for that. No, that's definitely suffered, yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's happened is I've become very alpha.
Okay.
And I've had to be very alpha to take charge of a construction company and lead it and make the decisions that I had to make and stuff. And I think then when I do meet a potential partner, they feel like there isn't really a place for them.
Why?
Because I don't need them. Because it's very obvious I don't. You know what? I feel like I recently discovered that I was ADD, so attention deficit disorder, and it explains a lot of decisions that I've made in my life. But one of the things is that you find it very difficult to stay with a partner long term.
How did you discover that?
my friend got diagnosed and we went on holiday together and she went, you've definitely got it. And I ignored her for ages and I just thought, oh, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And then about a year later, my son got diagnosed with a few different things. And I mean, like, he's got about five things. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, they said, well, who in the family's got, you know, some of these things? It's always hereditary. And I said, no one. And then I started thinking when I went home that night and I went, oh, it's me. It's come from me. So I was like, that explains a lot of my life decisions. And you know, when I was talking about having to escape and stuff, again, that's like another key characteristic of someone with ADD, where they can't stay in one place for a long period of time. They have to like keep moving around, having multiple businesses.
Shit, don't look on Company's House.
Exactly. So, that has explained like a lot of my life decisions and probably the reason why I mean, combined with like work and I guess I put the business first. I put the business first for the last 4 years and I worked too hard for those first 2 years not to. I worked too hard to do it that I couldn't sacrifice any slip up. And so when I have like dated people and stuff, I think they've always felt like they come second, fourth.
after the kids, yeah.
After the kids, family, friends, and then them. And yeah, they do. I do put them forth.
So that is so interesting to me. Have you ever disclosed that before?
No.
Okay.
No. But I'm learning about myself, right? And this is I don't do therapy anymore, but I feel like there's so much more I could look at. But that started me on my journey to learning why I am the way I am and why I make those decisions. And so I feel like I'm 39 now, I'm going to be 40 next year. I feel like I know myself so much better than I ever have.
So with the ADD, how is that, the fact that you know that?
Yeah.
Is it like a superpower now that you've been diagnosed with it? You go, that explains so much.
Well, of course, you know, I was offered medication and I thought, but I'm not, like, I love my life.
Yeah.
Like, if I take medication, I'm not going to want to do as many things. I'm not going to want to travel. I'll probably settle down and be really boring. Nah, I'll stay the way I am.
So yeah, it is like, I suppose that's your superpower. Medication solves everything. I mean, that's a joke, but it doesn't solve everything. There's obviously nothing wrong with you. That's the way you are. What if Mr. Right did come along for you, and you go, "Oh, actually, that feels different."
I mean, I've met a lot of people. I don't think there's a Mr. Right, honestly. I think the main thing for me is I'm happy as I am. I have everything that I could want in life. So I don't know. I mean, feel free to like intro me to people. If you think you know Mr. Right, like pass his number along, but I don't like, no. I don't, if, for me, that doesn't, it's not something that I'm like, it's not on my list of things that I want to achieve.
The reason I asked the question, it's very hard for me to do the same thing. I'm doing the same thing as you.
Okay.
All the businesses that I have and I run, I'm like, I work not necessarily myself into the ground, but I'll have an allocated amount of time to each business, each cog, and there'll be no time, as you will, for that.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, yeah, but you could do this. I'm like, I just, no, because I'm doing this for the business or that for that business or buying another house or buying another business.
But do you think if you met the right person, and this is what everyone always says to me, yeah, but if you met the right person,
no, because it doesn't last.
You would
long
change.
Enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they've become disinterested in what I'm doing. I'm like, no, next. Because like yourself, I'll just go, okay, right, next. I'll make a decision next.
Yeah. And I am quite selfish.
I'll
make decisions that are best for myself. And like I see other happily married couples where the woman seems to sacrifice, you know, her career or her life or to keep the other half happy. And I'm just like, oh, I
you
can't
never
think of anything
that.
Worse.
You should never, ever sacrifice your health, whatever, or anything for that other person, in my opinion.
I don't know of another relationship other than my mum and dad who did have a wonderful relationship. I wouldn't swap places with anyone.
Mm. I mean, there is give and take, don't get me wrong. But I am a selfish person. But what I'm better at now is receiving feedback than I ever was.
Do you ask for feedback?
All the time.
What, after dates?
No, not so much that. But I mean, let's say that business, whatever it is. I mean, if I don't hear back, I've got good enough feedback from the date anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's your feedback. But yeah, I mean, in business, I'll always ask for feedback. And naturally, you would on a site. Mm. That's the feedback. I'm going, right, okay, how can I improve? How can we make this 1% better every time we do it? That's what I'm always doing. And it can become intense for that person. Like, fucking hell, do you never rest? No, because I've got to get to the next stage in the business. And some people can go, when do you actually rest? This is what I like to do. This is what I enjoy doing. And then when you're with your kids, like now I'm with my kids, I'm present.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm with my friends, now I'm with my friends.
I've got a question for you.
Go on.
What's enough? Like, when's enough for your business?
There's no
I get asked that all
there's
time.
No ceiling.
There's not like a certain level that you're trying to aim for.
There's no ceiling. I've just answered this, but we've done content the other day. There's no ceiling.
Mm.
This is a game.
And you enjoy playing that game?
I love
yeah.
the game. I don't look at it and go, there's a level, or there's an amount of money, there's an amount of properties, there's an amount of businesses. I love the game.
Mm.
Because if I stop playing the game, that's when the thoughts start coming back and people know my story. And I just think, no, I've got to keep playing this game.
I enjoy the game too. I like the game. I tried to stop. Like, I was like, okay, well, I've reached my goal now. I've got this rental portfolio. I've nearly finished this site of 25 houses, so I've done my job. I'll just go and sit on the beach in Marbella.
Yeah.
It lasted less than 2 weeks. I was so bored. Like, my mind was active, and I was thinking of, like, new things that I wanted to do. And, yeah, I guess that's about knowing yourself and, like, knowing what you need in your life. I can't imagine ever retiring, actually.
No, and that's the thing. Like, it depends on the individual. Mm. Like, I can slow down. I can do 1 day a week and then be present with my kids for 6 days a week. Or I can be with myself. Like, for example, I can do the gym 5 days a week and spend, like, 2 hours in there. But actually, half hour I'm speaking to people in the gym.
Mm.
But I'm spending time... If I work on myself first, fact, then it'll be, like, depending on when I have my kids, and again, it'll be the same with you, it'll be my kids, then my business.
Mm.
Or it'll be my business, then my kids, depending on when I have them. So it all does depend on the situation, but I'm very aware of where I am in my life right now in comparison to where I used to be, and I can take a step back, or I can put the pedal down and go, I know where I'm going. But what about yourself?
I mean, I set my goals at the start of every year, which is something new for me as well, because I'd never done that before.
Okay.
And generally speaking, I seem to achieve them at the start of every year, so maybe I don't set them high enough, but I don't look any further than 12 months ahead.
See, I've said this a few times on a podcast. I never set goals.
Don't you?
I set objectives. And the reason I don't set goals is because I hit them.
Yeah.
Or if I don't hit them, then I get annoyed. Either way,
oh,
I'm getting annoyed.
It's really annoying, yeah.
So if I buy a property, I've hit it. Now I've got to set another one in a 12-month period.
Yeah.
Because people like us, and there's some people that won't relate, we're going to now set another one.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But when there's no ceiling, why fucking set one in the first place? Just set the objective.
I don't know.
Of getting there.
I don't know.
Because you make a rod for our own back.
I don't know what. I don't know. I can't like see myself in five. I don't know what I want to be doing in 5 years. Probably just more of the same. I think I'm really happy with what I've got now. So I'm like, actually, I don't want things to change that much. Yeah. I guess just more of the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just keep myself chugging along, put like a little extra goal on top of what I've done now and hope for more of the same.
Definitely. I mean, what was your biggest challenge of your life so far?
Working on a building site. No, it was actually, yeah, that. Retraining myself. Like, okay. So retraining myself, not just to do a different job, but like mentally to like deal with like massive numbers that I'd never had to deal with before in terms of financially, like, what was going out every month, you know, six figures out every month is like, it's a lot to take. Yeah. So retraining my mindset. And again, like therapy helped with that, because I remember, you know, speaking to my therapist at the beginning of taking over this development business and going, I can't do this. The men, they're not listening to me. Like, I've run out of money. I can't do this. I can't do that. And she was like a really fierce, like, feminist. And she would be like, yes, you can do this. Why can't you do this? You know, and she talked me through the like, I was talking myself out of it in my own head. So once I talked myself into the fact that I could do it, you know, I did do it and more, and then more followed. So I guess, like, the biggest challenge has been my own head and getting out of my own way.
Okay. And I was going to ask how you've done it, but you've already explained that throughout the whole podcast.
Yeah.
Tell me where your happy place is.
On the beach. I love being by the water, like on the sand, on the beach. Like, it's got to be a warm day though. Like, yeah. I don't want no North Wales beaches. It's got to be somewhere.
Or anywhere in Wales. No offense.
the three days a year when it's sunny in Wales, absolutely beautiful. It's about an hour's drive from where I live and it is stunning, but it's just not enough of those days.
So I'm going to show you a picture now. I've never done this on a podcast.
Okay.
How do you think that man I think of you right now?
I wasn't expecting to see that.
How do you think he feels you right now?
I don't know. You know what? He was proper old school. My dad was. I don't ever remember him saying, like, telling me that he loved me or anything like that. I don't know. I don't think. He wasn't one for, like, expressing his emotions.
Okay, now's your turn. If you could give your kids one message, the best piece of advice you've ever received, look down the camera and give it to them.
I would say to them, just do what makes you happy. Forget what everyone else says. Just do what makes you happy and follow that path.
Brilliant. And the last one, Charlotte, how are you doing?
Well, after all these questions, I'm a mess.
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm great. Like, I have a wonderful life. I have a very full life. Actually, I always say to my mum, if I'm going off on some wild trip somewhere, like I went off to Mexico on my own, and she's like, oh, it's so dangerous. Like, what if something happens to you? I'm like, mum, if anything ever happens to me, just know that I have no regrets in my life. I have done everything that I want to do. Like, so if the worst ever happens to me, you should just be happy, because I have done everything that I want to do in life.
Amazing. Charlotte. You've been absolutely amazing. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Brilliant.